The Guardian.
This podcast is part of The Guardian Small Business Network's Adventures in Business series, supported by Hiscox Insurance. Find out more about getting the right cover for your business at hiscox.co.uk/businessinsurance. Meet Joanna Montgomery.
Hello.
She's the founder of Little Riot and inventor of Pillow Talk. Pillow Talk is a wearable device that lets you stream the sound of your heartbeat direct to a loved one's pillow. The time most people feel loneliest is when they're in bed, and when you're so in love with someone, but you can't be with them. Hearing something as soothing as their heart, the one thing most synonymous with love, well, that can bring real comfort.
I guess the beginning was university. The way we engaged with technology was really exciting. Like the iPhone, the first iPhone had just come out and people loved how the iPhone swiped to unlock, and the Xbox 360 controller, people loved how that sat in their hands and how we experienced that. So I wanted to make something that required human input, or that was where we still interacted with technology, but it was in a more subtle or tactile way. So that was when I first started exploring using the human heartbeat as an input. So I locked myself in a lab for 2 weeks and made a circuit that worked and made a product that picked up a human heartbeat. And then out of nowhere, it just sort of took on this life of its own. And I woke up one day and I had all these emails from people saying, "Love Pillow Talk, it's great, where can I order one?" And I remember I had one morning I had 200 emails, and I thought, this is really strange, because the only place I'd written about it was on my university blog. And I was like, how did all these people find my university blog? So I emailed one of them back, and they says, "It's great, I'm glad you like it, but do you mind telling me where you heard about it?" And they says, we read about it on Gizmodo, which is like a big technology blog. And I was like, oh. So I went and Googled it, and sure enough, there it was on the front page of Gizmodo. And yeah, from there it just sort of continued to snowball.
Joanna's newfound celebrity brought in a load of press and job offers. Remember, this is 2010, in the heart of the recession. Graduate job offers were now a rare thing.
Oh, my friends thought it was crazy because, you know, at the time we were all really lucky to get job offers, and I was like, no, actually, I'm going to turn this down and go and do this thing. And everyone's like, what are you doing?
But Joanna was driven. And a few weeks later, after leaving university, a government agency, Innovate UK, awarded her £25,000 to develop Pillow Talk. Suddenly, people were taking her really seriously.
Because it had so much press, I think there was a lot of people that wanted to jump on the PR wagon and to be able to say, oh, we did that, or we were part of that. So that in hindsight, there was a lot of people who tried to help me or work with me or took money off me, because they wanted to do it, but they didn't necessarily have the skills to do it, which was a very steep and expensive learning curve. I think I've worked with 7 or 8 different engineering companies or design firms or people that said they could help but couldn't. So the next few years were sort of really long and expensive and complicated. Yeah.
And things continued to be hard for Joanna. But she moved to Newcastle and was driven further by the friendly and encouraging startup scene there.
I was living in Newcastle, which has a really wonderful startup scene, and I raised my first round of seed investment. Doing that deal sounds really stupid, but I just had a bad feeling about it. And one of my advisors at the time said, you know, it's fine, you're just uncomfortable because it's new to you and you haven't done it before. But even as I was sitting there on the day of completion with the sheet and all the documents I had to sign, I just thought, I don't want to do this. And he sat me down and he said, you know, I know you like to make lists, so let's write pros and cons, and you can decide from there. So we wrote this list, and the only con was that it just didn't feel good. And he says, it'll be fine, like, sign it. Once you've got the check, go to the bank, it'll be fine. So I signed it to the check, went to the bank, still didn't feel fine. And it's the first time I've ignored my gut instinct, and I will never do that again, because the next 18 months were just... I don't even know how I would describe it. I'm sure there are lots of lovely investors out there. Mine were not so lovely. Mine seemed to approach the whole thing like it was a game. So I think in that 18 months, things were a lot more difficult than they perhaps needed to be. And that ultimately culminated in my investors trying to close my business down on Christmas Eve. Absolutely no warning. So that was a kind of shock to the system. Fortunately, my lawyers are great, so they managed to sort of extricate me from that situation. But the next, I'd say, year after that was just really difficult because I was still trying to run the business. I'd had the plug pulled on me, we'd had to stop projects, we owed people money. It must have been 2014, just that whole year was under-resourced. If it wasn't for like the support of my parents and my boyfriend at the time, I wouldn't have been able to keep doing what I was doing. And it made it really hard to go forward because any new investors I spoke to would sort of look at that situation and say, well, what happened there? And I'd say, well, to be honest, I don't really know what happened there because I never got an explanation. And then, of course, they were like, oh, what's she not telling us? Which then made me look bad. And so that was all a bit of a nightmare.
By the end of 2014, things were spiralling out of control for Joanna. But she was thrown a lifeline. Joanna was offered a place on Wyra, an accelerator programme run by Telefonica. It saved the company. 2015 came along and Joanna knew this was the year that would either make or break Pillow Talk. She moved to London, home of startups, and felt she was prepared enough to start a funding campaign. She turned to Kickstarter.
Like running a Kickstarter campaign, that was like the most intense 30-day period of my life. It was just a constant, it was just non-stop between all the emails and the inquiries and the press. And then just as the UK and Europe were starting to wind down and America would start to wake up, and it was almost like a 24-hour process just trying to keep on top of it all. So our campaign ended and we're sort of sitting there. We sort of half-heartedly popped a bottle of Prosecco and we're sitting at our desks, and after sort of 20 minutes or so, the emails start coming in, phones start buzzing, and we thought, oh, wait a minute, what's going on here? And turns out there'd been a glitch in Kickstarter's system, and every single one of our backers had been sent an email saying, your payment has failed and it's a problem with your card provider. So of course everybody gets this email, and we had a lot of like teenagers that bought it, or couples that had either pulled their money together or maybe borrowed their parents' credit cards. Or so we started to get this influx of emails from people saying, oh my god, I was so sure I had money in that account. And then it got flagged so many times by some bank in the States that everybody that banked with that bank had their payments frozen. And then people were trying to log on to update their details, and it wasn't taking the new card details, but it was deleting the old ones. And we couldn't reach anyone at Kickstarter, and it was just this carnage. And it took Kickstarter 2 or 3 hours to fix it. And by the time they ran the payment collection, they only managed to collect 60% of the money we'd raised. And we said, well, you know, what happens now? And they said, well, you know, your backers have got 7 days to log in and update their payment details again. So Marion, who's my team member, that's all Marion did for a week, was email people and say, can we help you? You know, can we encourage you to log back in and put another card in? But of course, by this point, it's the week before Christmas. So people are busy, people have run out of money. And then there's also the mental hurdle of people feeling like they've already paid for something or already done it, and we need them to do it again. So Marion managed to claw back some of the money, but definitely not all of it. And we said to Kickstarter, you know, since this is a fault from your side and you've admitted fault, can you reduce or ideally waive your fee? And they said no. So they still took, I think it was £7,000 or £8,000 in fees for a service that hadn't really worked for us. So yeah, so despite finally launching the product and raising the money, we only ended up getting about 2/3 of what we raised. And we deliberately set a minimum target of what we needed, which then by the time we'd lost that money, we hadn't hit. So as soon as the campaign ended, it just started all over again. We were under-resourced and we were just on our back foot from that point, trying to sort of make up that cash gap. But I've been doing that over the last year. What it's meant is that our shipping date's been delayed by 6 months so far because we're trying to recoup those losses to keep the production on track. Yeah, we're getting there. So we're due to ship in the next couple of months at long last.
Joanna has had one hell of a bumpy ride. Investors pulling out on Christmas Eve, funds drying up, Kickstarter failing, delay upon delay. But it's been her resolute determination and genuine belief in Pillow Talk that's kept her going.
People say that businesses fail because nobody wants to buy the product. And every time I thought, oh, I can't do this anymore, or, you know, maybe this just isn't going to work, I'd get another email from somebody. And the thing about, like, the way people email us, people don't just email and say, can I buy the product, or where is it? People email and they say, hi, I'm so-and-so, I'm whatever age, I'm in a relationship with this person, this is how we met. You know, people share really intimate details of their lives with us because we've made something that obviously makes people feel like they can connect with us in that way. So that was probably the main thing that kept me going, was every time I thought, like, you know, I can't do this anymore, I'd get another email from someone saying, you know, this would really add value to my life, or this would make a huge difference for us. Something that really bothers me, not just about startups and small businesses, but kind of about the world in general, and it's kind of tied to my frustration around screens and the way that we consume content from screens and the way we produce and share content on screens, is we're fostering this sort of society where everybody talks about how great everything is. We have all these different facades that we show different people. We have sort of the front we put out to the world where, yeah, everything's great. And then we have the front we put to our investors where it's like, yeah, everything's fine. And then we have the front we put to our employees where it's like, yeah, you're totally going to get paid this month. And then with our friends and family, it's like, yeah. And it reaches the point where we can't be completely honest with anyone, probably not even ourselves. And I think we don't talk enough about the hard things and about the things people struggle with. So when I was on my accelerator program, one of the things I did was I ran a little group called Founders Club, but there's only two rules. And one of them was that everything that was said in the room stayed within the room, and you had to come prepared to share a truth or something you were struggling with and you needed help with. And just the sort of environment that created in that room was so interesting because, you know, it just took one person to say, oh, I'm really stuck with this. And then it was like other people felt, they were like, I'm really glad someone said that because I'm also stuck with this. And it was just really nice to hear those stories from other people and to sort of, to get past the front where everything's always great. And I think it's a huge problem in small businesses, and it's a problem that is added to by the way we charade our lives in social media, and everybody feels they have to just talk about how great everything is. And I worry sometimes that we run the risk of losing touch of that, or that we don't talk enough about mental health, I suppose. So one of the things I think small business owners should do is really try and be honest and to ask for help when they need help, because whatever you're carrying around inside you, somebody else is also carrying around inside you. And we all carry these little things around inside of us, and we feel like we can't voice them. But then as soon as one person voices them, it opens up the conversation for everybody else to voice them.
And the future's looking bright.
The good thing that's come from the Kickstarter campaign and from people being more open to wearables or what else technology can do is that we've had some really lovely stuff come out of it. So we're now working with a couple of children's hospitals to use the technology in situations where perhaps a baby's been premature or a child is sick and has to stay in hospital and maybe can't be held by the parents. We can send a mother's heartbeat into a premature baby or a sick baby to comfort them and sort of create an emotional connection in situations where it wouldn't typically be possible. And for us, that's where it starts to get really interesting, because the frustration I have around technology is that we adapt ourselves to technology rather than adapting technology to human situations. And something like a child being in hospital is a situation where, you know, sending a text message doesn't really cut it, or a string of emojis or a photograph, you know, people, that's just not good enough. Whereas our technology enables a genuine human connection to be created or fostered between two people. And I think that's quite powerful, and I think that could be it will be the beginning of something really great.
This episode of the Small Business Podcast was presented by me, Coco Khan, a specialist journalist at The Guardian, and produced by Rowan Slaney. Please subscribe and review on any of your favourite podcatchers and join the discussion on Facebook and Twitter. Just search Guardian Podcasts.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.